Are you ready to awaken to a new you? Welcome to Healthy You Radio, the radio network that empowers you to heal you. Keisha Yours is here to share over 25 years of frontline medical experience, bringing you the latest scientific and medical research, tempered with the holistic wisdom of Ayurveda and functional medicine, all so you can be the best you you can be. And now your host, Keisha Yours.
And welcome to Healthy You Radio, everybody. This is Keisha Yours, your wellness coach and advisor for today, and bringing you a radio that empowers you to heal yourself. If you can't find us on the radio dial here at KKNW, 1150 AM Alternative Talk every Monday through Wednesday at 1 PM, you can find us on healthyyouradio.com, live streaming off the internet, or on Facebook on the Healthy You Radio fan page, or you can do our archive shows button and podcast us and take that information from the last 2 years wherever you go. Great wisdom about every bit of health from all aspects, from spiritual, environmental, physical, and emotional, from wonderful teachers that are making an impact in our world today on what we understand about health and wellness. And my guest today is no exception to that. This is actually Dr. Bernie Siegel Day again. We've interviewed him a couple of years ago, and I thought for our anniversary, it was time to bring him on again. Dr. Siegel, who prefers to be called Bernie, not Dr. Siegel, was born in Brooklyn, New York in 1978, and he originated the exceptional cancer patients, a specific form of individual and group therapy that utilizes patients' drawings, dreams, images, and feelings. ECAP is based on carefrontation instead of confrontation. And in 1986, his first book, Love, Medicine, and Miracles, was published. And this event redirected his life. And in 1989, Peace, Love, and Healing. And in 1993, How to Live Between Office Visits followed. He's currently working on other books with the goal of humanizing medical education and medical care, as well as empowering patients and teaching survival behavior to enhance immune system competency. Bernie's realization that we all need help dealing with the difficulties of life, not just the physical ones, led to Bernie writing his fourth book in 1998, Prescriptions for Living. It helps people to become aware of the eternal truths and wisdom of the sages through Bernie's stories and insights rather than wait for a personal disaster to happen. Welcome to the show, Dr. Siegel.
Hi, thank you.
So you're in the middle of Hurricaneville over there, aren't you?
Yeah, we just, as a matter of fact, I'm going to close a window because they're cutting up a tree that fell on our neighbor's house. Actually, three trees fell on the house.
Oh, dear.
And they're working on it now. But, and the other thing, that your call is also a little bit of a gift to me, because our phones were acting funny and I couldn't figure it out. And what's happening is two of the lines must be crossed, because when you dialed the different number, which is still our house, it rang on another phone.
Oh.
So I got to call the phone company now. So it's a good thing that... I'm having the interview today. It'll help me straighten out our phone lines.
Great. That is good. That actually happened to us in my clinic. Our patients were complaining, and we had to figure out, because they couldn't get through to us, and it was lines crossed. I guess we say that for a reason. Our lines got crossed, right?
Yes, right.
Now we know what it really means. So how are you in the midst of all of this?
Well, you know, having your power, electricity, because that term always means a lot to me, having your power.
Mm.
But I think that that when you have electricity and the house runs, I've learned to put up with all kinds of things. So I found myself less troubled by this storm than many previous ones.
Oh, that's
and,
good.
You know, I keep what I call trying to live the sermon, you know, that what I preach, I try to live, or I wouldn't feel honest about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember years ago getting compliments from people, and I'd say, why? And they said, because your wife and children are in the audience. And my wife actually participated with me. And I said, well, what does that have to do? And they said, you must be speaking the truth, or you couldn't do it in front of them.
Ah, good point.
And I thought that was interesting. And over the years, you watch, you know, some of these so-called gurus, how they live when they're off the stage is very different than what they're telling everybody.
Mm-hmm. That's a very important one, to walk your talk.
Yeah, to be honest.
Right. And I know that in your work with people, I know you broke new ground with your book, Love, Medicine, and Miracles, and explored the role that mind can play in fighting illness. And I've been having a lot of patients with cancer lately, and so I've really been focusing on it, hence this interview. to try and get information out there for people and to listen to from people like you that have been dealing with us on the front lines. And a lot of times I had a patient that was just in today with a lot of pain, and I brought her into the space of helping her understand that the emotional things that were going on for her probably had something to do with her pain. Well, and they resist that a lot.
Let me interrupt you and tell you how to get through to it quickly.
All right.
If you said to her, please describe your pain,
mm-hmm.
then listen to the words that she comes up with.
That's what we did.
And say to her, how do those words fit your life?
Mm-hmm.
And you need to eliminate those things in your life, then you'll have a lot less pain.
Mm.
And some people just say a word. I always remember the lady who said draining and then just said thank you and walked away.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was enough for her. And another who was going to be admitted to the hospital with severe migraine headaches said pressure. And when we dealt with the pressure, it turned out to be her marriage, and the headache was gone, and she got up and went home instead of to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that, again, what helped me put it in perspective was a friend saying to me, if you're hungry, do you get upset? I said, no. She said, what do? I get something to eat. She said, fine. Then ask yourself, what nourishment do you need?
Mm-hmm.
And I think if we use it in that way, then the way I put it is the curse becomes a blessing, because, the word of Nietzsche was love your fate. And Joseph Campbell said, he's telling us that when you're going through hell, ask, why do I need this? So you end up learning from your trouble. Rather than resenting and bitter and trying to fix everything, you stop and say, okay, why do I need this? What's it trying to teach me? And when I do that, I find that, again, the words that pop into my head help me know what I need to do in my life, and then I feel a lot better about it.
Mm-hmm. There's another way of asking about pain is what would that part of your body be trying to say to you? And
yeah.
You know, what's it saying? What is its speech? And so that's another interesting way of kind of getting down to it, like giving it a voice so it doesn't have to just keep banging on you from the inside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, so you were saying something about me, you know, being a revolutionary or a leader. But what I found was I wasn't. It upset me to learn what I wasn't taught in medical school.
Mm-hmm.
Because what I saw was that those who were into psychotherapy, from psychiatrists to others, knew what I was talking about. And said, yes, yes, we understand, we know all this. It's not interesting. And you see, where it was interesting, it was inappropriate. So it didn't become a part of certain medical journals. And where it was appropriate, it wasn't interesting. But what impressed me was the consistency of what I had discovered in terms of personality, life events, using dreams, drawings, how all these things were consistent, and that they were accepting what I had submitted, but just was saying to me, yes, we know all this, so you're not teaching us anything new. And this is, well, Carl Menninger, many years ago, the psychiatrist, when I sent him Love, Medicine, and Miracles to review, he wrote back and said, I was about to write a book called 10 Hopeless Cases. People, in other words, 10 people who are considered hopeless who are alive and well today.
Mm-hmm.
He said, but you just wrote it, so I'm not going to write the book.
Mm.
That's probably the greatest compliment I could ever have, really. But
certainly.
He knew from helping people with their lives that when he helped them to live, it sustained their bodies as well. So I'm always saying to people, love your life and love your body. And then it's amazing what can happen. I mean, it doesn't mean, you know, nobody's going to live forever, but instead of dying in a few months, you may be walking around 10 years later. And so to me, it's the word I love is potential, that we're not statistics. We have potential, and we need to understand that and use it. And when we do, then some wonderful things happen. You know, when you're not afraid of failing or doing it wrong, then you... I love the movie Harold and Maude, the line from Ruth Gordon, reach out, take a chance, get hurt even, play as well as you can, go team, go. Give me an L, give me an I, give me a V, give me an E, live. Otherwise, you got nothing to talk about in the locker room. So I'd say to people, go out and live the life that was intended for you, not the one imposed on you by other authority figures.
That's an interesting differentiation right there, because a lot of the patients that I get that have autoimmune disease, which eventually cancer too, their expectation of what life is supposed to look like for them or their dream doesn't really match the life that they're living. And that disconnect and that dissonance right there, that's what causes illness.
Yeah. And especially when you internalize anger, then you're basically attacking yourself. I think fear, anger, you know, I say to people, you know, what's the opposite of love? And most of them will yell, fear, hate. You know, no, it's indifference. Mm-hmm. And worse is rejection and abuse. And when you've grown up with rejection, you become self-destructive as well as destructive of others. You know, look at what the newspaper's filled with. You know, killing wife, children, schoolmates, employees, and then committing suicide. And that's coming from their childhood and how they were brought up, and all the things that, you know, are not dealt with and not healed and taking its toll. I mean, two studies. One was done with Harvard students. They were asked, did your parents love you? Those who wrote in a lot of negative words, 35 years later, 98% of them had suffered a major illness. Those who wrote in a lot of nice descriptive words of their parents, only about 28% had suffered a major illness. And Caroline Thomas, a psychiatrist at Johns Hopkins many years ago, had the medical students fill out personality profiles and draw pictures of themselves. And then 30 or 40 years later, she looked at them and she said, I could predict what disease they were going to get and what part of their body they were going to get it in from the
How was that done through drawings? I'm always fascinated by this because I know you do this a lot in your work with the, doing the drawings.
I mean, think in a mechanical sense. Think about if you drew yourself with no hand, say, or no leg. It'll be easy to say to you, how are you going to reach out? How are you going to get a grip on things? How are you going to move? You know, you're stuck in your life. And then people stop and think because they have drawn the picture, you see. It's not me saying, you know, I've been watching you and this is what I've noticed. Then they can argue and say, no, you don't understand. But if they draw the picture, then it's their statement. And especially with children, I will show it to parents and say, look how your child feels. See, when a child comes in, I mean, I don't make up any of these stories, and said, Dr. Siegel, would you operate on me? They're teasing me in the locker room and gym. I said, okay. Draw a picture of yourself in the operating room. And I give him a full box of crayons, so he has every color. All he did was pick up a black crayon, draw an insect on the operating table, and me in black. And I said to his parents, what he needs is your love, not just plastic surgery. He's never going to feel good about himself if he doesn't feel love. And, you know, that's what all the kids need. If they grow up with love, it's a different world. Then they have self-worth, self-esteem. They take care of themselves. They make healthy decisions. You know, it doesn't mean you don't eat a quart of chocolate ice cream now and then. I mean, not a whole quart, but because one of our kids said that. I said, if you had 15 minutes to live, this was in a group. I wasn't threatening him. You know, what would you do? He said, I'd buy a quart of chocolate ice cream and eat it. And I said, I don't have to worry about you. but that's what people need to find is their chocolate ice cream.
Right.
And live it. And then amazing things happen. And that's what kept me on this path for over 30 years, that I don't know the future for anybody. So when they show up, I say, hey, let's give it a try. Who knows? Because, you know, we have a book coming out. I mean, it's out right now, called A Book of Miracles. Because all these wonderful stories that people have, and many of people who read it will say, well, that's not a miracle. But it's like no coincidences with something Elizabeth Kubler-Ross used to say. These things happen in your life that just work everything out for you.
Well, Bernie, let's talk about the miracles and this piece in the next segment because we have to take a quick break, okay? You're listening to Healthy Year Radio. This is Keisha Ewers with Dr. Bernie Siegel. We'll return in a moment. Stay tuned.
Reach the stars. Pull one down to you. Shine it on my heart.
Center's exclusive body care collection introduces a line of all-natural Ayurvedic body creams designed to put you on the path to perfect health. Formulated by local medical professionals, Fern Simple's Ayurvedic body creams tone, detoxify, and heal using ancient Ayurvedic recipes and principles. All-natural essential oils soothe your skin, while specially formulated aromas whisk you into a state of bliss. Experience what balanced health feels like and try the Fern Simples collection, sold exclusively through Fern Life Center, or find them online at fernlifecenter.com. Buy one full-size body cream and receive an age-reducing eye cream absolutely free. Offer good only through the month of August.
If you are tired of feeling sluggish, overweight, and out of balance, then welcome to the Ideal Protein Weight Loss Method. The Fern Life Center now offers this medically designed protocol that results in fat loss while sparing muscle mass. The Ideal Protein Weight Loss Method is an easy four-phase protocol that helps stabilize the pancreas, hormones, and blood sugar levels while burning fat and maintaining muscle. Not to mention an excellent support for cellulite reduction. The best part? We guarantee success. Welcome to your last diet. Call the Fern Life Center now and register for our next free introductory seminar. That's right, free. Call 425-391-3376 or go to fernlifecenter.com. Mention this ad and qualify for a drawing to receive your first product free. Call 425-391-3376 and find your Healthy You.
Information provided on the Healthy You radio show is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for the advice provided by your physician or other healthcare professional. You should not use the information from the broadcast of the radio show for diagnosing or treating a health problem, disease, or prescribing any medication or other treatment.
It has been said from ancient to modern times that the seed of health begins in the colon. Fern Life Center's colon hydrotherapy is a safe, clean, odor-free method of cleaning up your digestion without the use of drugs or chemicals. Toxicity of the colon can cause severe disease, ranging from simple allergies to major medical problems, including cancer, altered immunity, and even mental health issues that range from brain fog to bipolar disorder. Go to www.fernlifecenter.com today to schedule your colon hydrotherapy appointment and start your journey to clean health today. If you book now, you will receive our signature chakra balancing treatment to go with your colon hydrotherapy session free. This is a $35 value, absolutely free if you book today. Go to www.fernlifecenter.com for more information about our unique colon hydrotherapy program.
Thinking about doing a cleanse? Why not do it all the way and detox your body, spirit, and mind? Here's what people are saying about Fern Life Center's Ayurvedic full body detox program called Panchakarma.
My journey with Keisha and Fern Life Center began in February 2008. Upon my initial consultation, my heart and spirit knew Keisha would be the compassionate healer and medical provider I had looked for all of my adult life. My now husband and I went through the Ayurvedic Panchakarma detox program and continued to meet with Keisha to focus on our individual growth and healing. I was able to begin peeling back the layers of blockage I had placed in my life decades ago, like the layers of an onion. Not only did I lose 10 pounds and clear up my skin and digestive issues, but this program was a catalyst that created a sense of freedom in my life that I honestly had not thought was possible to achieve.
Start your journey to health and call Fern Life Center at 424-391-3376 today for a consultation with Keisha. Start your cleanse today. For more information and to book an appointment, visit fernlifecenter.com. That's fernlifecenter.com. Mention this ad and get one of your detox supplements free. Not valid with other offers.
Time for something different. Time for Alternative Talk 1150.
Welcome back to Healthy You Radio, everybody. This is Keisha Ewers. You're joining us for radio that empowers you to heal yourself. My guest today is the beloved Dr. Bernie Siegel. Welcome back to the show, Bernie.
Thanks, Keisha.
So I know for our listeners that are just joining us that that you have been very instrumental in a lot of the way that we think about the power that the mind has in illness. You wrote Love, Medicine, and Miracles, and then Faith, Hope, and Healing, and a lot of these stories I find so important when I'm listening to my patients, to me, story is everything.
Yes.
And it's the context, it's the emotional landscape, it's, you know, the spirituality. All those pieces are so important about whether, you know, what's happening and what the environmental context is in which it's happening. And I love the fact that you do the drawings with people. I think I was saying off air that I'm going to have to put some crayons in my office. And for those of the listeners out there right now, you can expect we're going to be having some pictures.
You know, I can tell you on my website, BernieSiegel, SiegelMD.com, there is a webinar, a video that you can watch of my drawings and my discussing them. When I say my drawings, I don't mean they're that I drew them, but of patients I'm taking care of. And so you can look at that too.
Oh,
but
that'd be great.
Every color has meaning. The positions on the page are past, present, and future. So you can tell people, you know, even with some of our kids, we have five kids, that, you know, Dad, where should I go to college? Draw a picture. And then I can see what he has in his future and where he's headed and what's probably the best choice for him. So it can be, what job should I take? Where should I live? Who should I marry? What treatment should I have? You know, when you draw the devil giving you poison, that is not a good picture.
Right.
And you're going to have all kinds of troubles. And that's the thing that, again, I began to realize how powerful the mind is. I mean, people think they're being radiated. The machine, however, has no radioactive material in it due to a repair error. And yet their tumor shrank and they had side effects of the treatment they thought they were getting.
Well, I say 75% placebo.
Yeah.
And
that's why. I mean, I began, I know you're familiar with hypnotherapy, study the works of Milton Erickson and others, so that I was careful how I spoke to patients.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't make them worse.
Right.
I call it deceiving people into help.
Yes.
I mean, it's amazing what a lie can accomplish. I did a lot of children's surgery. So, you know, when the kids had faith in me, I had no trouble lying to them in a therapeutic way. You know, it's like rubbing them with an alcohol sponge and saying it'll numb your skin. And a third of them look at me like, what's wrong with the other doctors? Why don't they do that? Oh, and the one that impressed me most, you see, again, it was my experience that changed me, not whether I believed in something or not. But I can remember saying to children in the emergency room, when you go up to the operating room, you will go into the room and fall asleep. I'm thinking of anesthesia, so they wouldn't be worried. But the kids literally fell asleep on the stretcher as we wheeled them in. And I realized, well, you told them in the emergency room he'd fall asleep when he went in the room.
They're very suggestible.
It was just incredible how the kids would, you know. So, yes, that's when I began to be careful about what I said so it would be therapeutic and help them get through the experience with no trouble.
Well, and viruses are such an interesting, little creatures here, because they can actually evolve to match whatever's going on. And, you know, people will come to me that have picked up a virus, which someone has told them that they're going to have for life, and there's no cure. There are many of them out there, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've been curing those viruses in my office for a long time now, and it's been all through these kinds of tools. You know, what is the script inside of your head that says that you need to have this and that your life isn't worth living? You know, why did you bring this little guy on board? Why are you making it great for him to have a habitat in your body, you know?
So I've dealt with chronic Lyme. Walking the dogs in the woods, and I got a bite, and I thought it was a bruise, so, you know, went untreated for many weeks. And then finally somebody said to me, do you see that spot on your leg? I use my experience with a so-called chronic disease, knowing I can get well, but knowing also I'm not neurotic. You know, if I say to a doctor, I'm having a chronic, it's in your mind. We don't have that chronic disease.
Mm-hmm.
So I think both, you have to look at both perspectives, you know, honor the patient and what they're experiencing.
That's
not,
right.
Not the diagnosis, but their experience. And I've learned too, from hypnosis to homeopathy to acupuncture, if something works, I know in my head it's not a placebo, because I'm testing everything, not believing in it. And so when it works, I can say, okay, this is good. You know, I will use it with my faith.
Well, and you have, exactly, that's what I was just going to say. You have to have faith in the tools that you're using.
Yes.
And that requires some feedback that it's working.
Yeah, even the compassion, you know, another study. if the doctor was seen as compassionate, the doctor listened to you, mm-hmm. those patients got well faster and were more likely to take their medications as well.
Mm-hmm.
But one other thing, let me jump back when you mentioned the virus. You see, what I'm always trying to get across to people is when I talk about potential, we can alter our genes. They don't make the decision. We do, in the sense of our internal chemistry. I always say identical twins don't get the same disease in the same week of their life. I mean, one can live a whole life and never develop breast cancer, and the other can get it when they're 40. You have to look at what's going on in their life and what messages they're giving their body. So the viruses resist vaccines. The bacteria turn antibiotics into food. You know, trees and other plants survive all kinds of weather conditions. You know, and don't bleed to death when leaves fall off in the winter. Mm-hmm. So we are, built to survive. But if you don't give your message of survival to your body, then it sees death as a satisfactory outcome. I always say Monday morning, more heart attacks, strokes, suicides, and illnesses. So you have to get up letting your body know, I love my life. And that's when I began to go out and lecture, I met many of patients from our office who, because I worked with other surgeons, so we had a lot of people. I met patients that I thought were dead. See, and I'd say, how come? What's going on? Oh, and then they would tell a story about what they did. They could move. They could get a new job. I mean, it's just all kinds of things. Take your tie off. It just was what they needed to do to live this different.
Well, you mentioned Elizabeth Kubler-Ross earlier,
yeah.
and the near-death experience research that's been done. Dr. Kenneth Ring did this in the 80s, a lot of it. And, what they found out is in longitudinal outcome studies, 20 years after somebody had a near-death experience, is that that impact of what they learned from that, which was that love is the most important thing. It was the little things like stopping and helping the kid up that had fallen over on their bike, stopping at the lemonade stand. All of those things that they had changed right after that near-death experience remained intact in 80% of those people 20 years later.
Right. It's the only thing of permanence is love.
That's
my lecture.
Yeah.
And I had a near-death experience when I was only 4 years old. I've had an unusual life. I didn't realize it was unusual until I began to learn what other people were living.
Mm-hmm.
At age four, I almost choked to death on a toy I put in my mouth because I'd seen some carpenters putting nails in their mouth. So I was imitating them and aspirated it. And I can remember leaving my body and not thinking about how can you see. But Ken Ring also wrote a book called Mind Sight,
yes,
in which people born blind see when they are out of their body. So I know when I leave my body, I'll be perfect again. And I'll decide when I'm tired of my body. But, when you have experiences like that, as you say, even though it's not in your memory every day, when you're 4 years old, you don't wake up every day thinking about that event. You got plenty of other trouble. but it's still there. And it's so vivid in my memory.
Mm-hmm.
I had a past life experience when a friend over the phone said, why are you living this life? I went into a trance. And it was a phone call.
Mm-hmm.
And I told her what I was seeing, which had a lot to do with me with a sword being destructive. I said, maybe that's why I'm a surgeon, to make up for that. So I've been rescuing things my whole life, and now I understand why.
That's a really interesting point. I had a near-death experience during one of my children's birth, too, and had to go get the nurse in my spirit body and say, I need some IV solution. And they said that I actually called on the call light and said that I need a liter of fluids. But I remember doing it out of body, and came back to, they were laughing at when they brought me back and said, only a nurse would actually put on the call light and tell us what we need to do.
But you see, that's survival behavior.
Right.
If you're a nice nurse who doesn't bother anybody and does what everybody else wants, then you could be dead today.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something I'm always saying to people. You go to the hospital, be a responsible participant, not a patient who's a submissive sufferer, and you're more likely to go home alive. But one other thing I have to add, that what I've learned is that consciousness is not local. When you talk about experiences, whether it's near death, past life, all these things, what convinced me most of all was meeting someone in California when I was attending an ASPCA non-kill conference. I get on an elevator, nice young lady there. I said, hi, what do you do? Why are you here? She said, oh, I'm an animal intuitive. That struck me. You see, belief, it's like, come on, that's crazy. Who can talk to animals? But a few weeks later, I get home to Connecticut, and our son is a neighbor, and I have animals in many houses that I go and feed in the morning. But his indoor cat had escaped because somebody left the house open. And so a few weeks go by, she doesn't show up. I figure, well, she's dead because we live in a wooded area. And I called Amelia via email, and I said, Amelia, tell me where the cat is. You claim you can do this. And without even a photograph, just the description, a few days later, I get an email. The cat is alive. I can see the moon through its eyes. She described our son's house in incredible detail, plus all the other pets that were there. And she said it's under the house. Well, that made no sense to me. But when I went over there the next morning, I realized there's a stairway that comes down from the house, outside the house, with the sides down to the ground. And the cat was underneath the stairway. But when I started screaming her name, at the top of my lungs, I heard her answer me from under the stairway. And I got her out and saved her.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the part that blew my mind. And the key, I'd say to everybody listening, you want to know who you are, what to do, quiet your mind. Because that's the instructions I got over and over from Amelia. Bernie, calm down.
That's right.
Get into the animal's head. I related to the still pond and how that appears in myth. You know, the ugly duckling realizes I'm a swan looking into the water. But if he hated his mother for rejecting him, he would never see his beauty.
And well, you have to be receptive, and
yeah,
you know that brain
quiet
has to
your
be
life
quiet.
And your mind,
right?
To know who you really are.
Right. Bernie, we have to take a quick break again. We'll be back in a moment with more from Dr. Bernie Siegel. This is Healthy You Radio. Stay tuned.
Are you ready to find balance in your life? Sometimes life can be challenging on all levels, physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually. Visit Fern Life Center and let Keisha Ewers, ARNP, an integrative medical specialist, design a detoxification program that fits your unique needs, body type, and lifestyle. One size does not fit all, and detoxing can potentially be harmful if not done properly. Enter Fern Life Center's detoxification and Panchakarma program and come out with a new lease on life, feeling more energetic, peaceful, and lighter. Call Fern Life Center today and find out what transformation feels like. Call 425-391-3376 and make an appointment with Keisha today. Mention this ad and get a free steam in their unique detoxifying herbalized cedar steamer with any regular massage. Lighten up your body, mind, and spirit. You're worth it. Go to fernlifecenter.com and sign up for Keisha's free monthly newsletter, and you can keep up with the latest health tips, seasonal recipes, words of wisdom, and get your questions answered in her advice column. Don't just take our word for it. Listen to what others have to say about Fern Life Center's amazing weight loss program. Give yourself the gift of good health this season.
Since going on the Fern Life Center Ideal Protein Diet Program, I've been able to go off my cholesterol medication. My total cholesterol is 58 points lower than it was 3 months ago, and that is after going off Lipitor. My good cholesterol has improved, and my bad cholesterol is down, and my triglycerides are now normal. I've lost 55 pounds, 26 inches in 5 months. I feel like I have my life back and am free from my food addictions. Woohoo! Thanks, Keisha, and Ideal Protein.
Go to fernlifecenter.com to schedule your first appointment today. That's fernlifecenter.com. Mention this ad and get a water bottle absolutely free.
Are you tired of all the conflicting information on medicine and health out there? Have you figured out there is no one-size-fits-all way of eating, exercising, and living? Join the woman who has spent her life practicing and studying medicine around the world. Keisha's Western and Eastern medical training are integrated in a transformative show that teaches and inspires you to be the best you can be. Join Keisha Ewers, ARNP, Wednesdays at 1 p.m. on Healthy You, radio that empowers you to heal you.
Get a grip on life with Alternative Talk 1150.
And welcome back to Healthy You Radio, everybody. This is Keisha Ewers. You're listening to radio that empowers you to heal yourself because, as Bernie Siegel does, the role the mind can play in fighting illness is huge. Welcome back to the show, Bernie.
Hi, thank you.
So before we went on break, we were talking a little bit about drawing and what those drawings taught, you know, say miracles and ways of coming out of illness by understanding what your subconsciousness is doing.
I mean, so on two levels. One is I could point out to people how they drew themselves so that they could see it wasn't me criticizing them, but something about their personality and how they felt about themselves. Like one lady even folded the page, and inside is somebody with no head and hands.
Mm.
I mean, that's the real person who she's afraid to show the world.
Mm.
On the outside, she drew a better picture, but again, that's not her. And one boy, I remember in the emergency room, everybody's yelling at me, take him up the operating room. He needs a, you know, he's got an acute abdomen. He had what we call a board-like abdomen,
right,
meaning it's so hard that you could literally almost stand on it because he's in such pain. But I said to him, draw me a picture. And he drew his abdomen in green, and that's a nice, healthy color. And I thought, no, something's going on here. So I said, I'm going to watch him. And everybody's, you know, yelling at me, calling me an idiot. How can I? After I got to know the boy, you know, within an hour or so of spending time with him, he said he was a drug addict, and he knew he was having a reaction to a drug that he'd given himself. And it saved him from, you know, being rushed up to the operating room and for no reason. So those were the things that helped me to do. And other times it told me they do need an operation. Something is going on.
Right.
And you need to get in there. So I could reflect it, you know, back at the person and say, this is the information and why I feel this way. And another, you know, that popped into my head is we need to keep the child in ourselves alive, the sense of humor. Because I remember a lawyer sitting in my office saying to me, why do I need surgery? And I thought, I mean, this could be the rest of my day trying to explain to a lawyer why he needs an operation. So I said to him, I have five children, a lot of tuition bills. And he burst out laughing. See, from that moment on, we were friends. And then I could sit and talk to him and listen. Because this is a quote from a lawyer who sent me an article he wrote, and the basic point was, while learning to think, I almost forgot how to feel. See, in the midst of a tragedy, he found himself thinking about what to do rather than supporting all the people who needed him. And he realized what a mistake that was, and it changed him.
That's the difference between a head-centered person and a heart-centered person. And
my sentence, I love country western music. I find it very therapeutic. I'm talking about classic, you know, from the 70s and 80s and so forth. But let my heart make up my mind. I love that line.
I have a tattoo on my arm that is a calligraphy that actually means mindfulness with an open heart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have to pay attention to feelings.
Right.
Because our body is trying to talk to us and tell us.
So that leads us into this discussion about cancer. You could be called an expert on cancer. You've dealt with it for a long, many decades. And so, you know, when somebody, I know you've run into patients the same as I have, people that have come in and said, I'm worried I have cancer. My mom had it at this age that I am right now, right? Breast cancer. And one of the things that I'll say is, you know, you can think yourself into illness pretty easily, actually, when you're fear-driven. So what do you talk to people about when, you know, when fear is part of the landscape around cancer?
Well, I explain to them about the chemistry in their body. I mean, it's a book, Biology of Belief by Bruce Lipton. There's another book out called The Energy Cure by Bill Bengston, William Bengston. I mean, our potential is incredible. And I just point this out to people, but also that when they're living in fear, that's to protect them. I always say, if you're walking down the street and you see a poisonous snake, you may turn and run faster than you've ever run before. And I've had this happen to me. I was biking on a trail through the woods. I saw what I thought was an animal. And before I even could evaluate what I saw, I had whipped the bike around and was starting to go the other way. And then I turned to look, and I realized it's a branch and a shadow. It's not an animal.
Mm-hmm.
But what amazed me was I was protecting myself before I could even evaluate it or think about it and know. And I thought, that's wonderful.
Survival.
If fear can do that, great.
Right.
But if everything you see is a rabid animal threatening you, it breaks down your body. You can't repair it and grow if you're living in that. See, when you're living in love and compassion, your body is able to grow and heal much faster than if you're living in fear. So fear, as I say, is a temporary element to help you survive, jumping higher, running faster, whatever. But where it's sending the blood, you see, is to places that will get you out of the situation. But when you get into love and relationships and connections and so forth, then there's a shift in the body chemistry and the circulation, which is to help you stay well, heal wounds, and grow faster.
Now, you have some meditations that for people that do have active cancer and they're in mm-hmm. treatment process. And I know, you know, some of the things that you talk about is making friends with your body, not creating a war zone, but
right.
maybe thinking of something like birds coming in and taking that away as food, you know.
I have an article on my website called Waging a War Against Cancer, because I learned from Mother Teresa, I will not attend an anti-war rally, but if you ever have a peace rally, call me.
Mm-hmm.
See, what a different focus that is.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to help people eliminate their illness, but not by killing, attacking, fighting, by healing yourself and your life and finding peace. Now, there are a lot of kids who say, yeah, I want to have an airplane and blast my tumor. But there are also more adults who say, when God's light is melting a block of ice, the tumor melts away.
Mm-hmm.
But when I'm trying to have dogs, you know, or Pac-Man eat it up, nothing happens. And in Solzhenitsyn's book, Cancer War, there's a wonderful term. He had cancer, so I knew intuitively he understands. In the scene, he describes the men sitting around the ward in the hospital. One of them says, oh, look, I found this book in the medical library. It says here there are cases of self-induced healing, not recovery through treatment, but actual healing, see?
Mm-hmm.
And it was as though self-induced healing flooded out of the great open book like a rainbow-colored butterfly. When I read that, I thought, he knows it all. Now, whether he knows it intellectually or not, I don't know, but his creative mind. He doesn't say there are cases of spontaneous remission, but there are miracles, self-induced. And why the rainbow-colored butterfly? Again, back to the drawing.
Right.
Every color is an emotion. Get your life in order, the rainbow. See? And the butterfly is a transformation symbol.
Right.
So you transform your life, find order, and boom, healing can happen. And
when people need chemo or radiation, because at times, you know, these things are appropriate. It's why we live in this century and we have those things available. It's also making friends with that, too, because I know people come to see me because I do functional medicine and Ayurvedic medicine as well as Western medicine, and they know I bridge. And so they'll ask me, well, what do you think? You know, and I think a lot of times they'll think I'm going to say, no, let's just do a natural cure. And, you know, I always say, no, this has to come from inside of what you feel.
Right.
You know, it's not about what I think.
That's why the drawings are helpful. They're not words and intellect
right.
and thinking. Because there are people who say, you know, I want to have macrobiotics instead of chemotherapy. And the kitchen looks like hell.
Mm.
You see, and the chemotherapy is yellow energy flowing into their body. Mm-hmm. Or people draw God as a radiation machine with this purple beam coming out of God.
So it's making friends with whatever choice you do come up with.
And that's why I try to eliminate conflict. I say, look, I need to know what your intellect thinks. I need to know what your intuition or your unconscious believes. Mm-hmm. So we will have unity. And if the drawing doesn't look good, like one lady said, I have to have surgery next week, and she hands me a black box with her, and that's the only crayon she uses, black. She's lying on the table. There's nobody there, and she's in an empty black box lying on the table. I said, look, you either need a new surgeon, don't have it, you know, or you've got to change your image. She said, well, no, I like the surgeon. I want to go ahead, but I'll change my image. So 4 or 5 times a day, she visualized surgery, successful, going home well, et cetera. Mm-hmm. A week later, her picture is gorgeous.
Mm.
Their doctors, family, God's light, everything. You see? And again, you know, it's hard for me to not stop telling stories because I think of the lady who was getting chemotherapy. She said, I got in the car. She came to one of our support groups with a big smile. I said, what happened? She said, I had my chemotherapy. I got in the car. My husband hands me a bag every time because I throw up all the way home. This time, I opened the bag. There were a dozen roses for my husband in it.
Aww.
I never vomited again.
Aww.
And the person was my first book. There was a rose on the cover, which happens to be my mother's name. But I thought, where did that come from? So I called up to say, why is there a rose on the cover? And the man who made the cover said, because that story touched me. Mm. And so he put a rose on the cover.
That's very lovely. So talking about, you know, cancer a little bit more and coming around to that, people will say, you know, well, what should I eat? You know, what kind of exercise should I do? How should I combat my nausea? What should I do? And everybody's different, you know, everyone's a different individual and how they're being with this. I look at it as this teaching moment. I used to do hospice for years and I think that cancer is sort of, you know, post-doctorate university teaching.
Yeah, but you see, even at hospice as an example, how do I evaluate a good hospice? You have dropouts and graduation.
Mm-hmm.
Because people come there and they do what they really should be doing. That is getting people's lives in order.
That's right.
You know, ready for it. And then the people say, you know, now that my life is in order and I have relationships with my kids that I didn't have before, I'd like to go home. I don't feel like dying anymore.
And we did home hospice for weeks or months, or more.
Yeah.
So, I used to do home hospice, and I would say, you know, look, I'm giving you enough morphine right now to kill an elephant. So this is emotional pain. This isn't physical pain. Who is it that you need to get clear with? Oh, my son, I haven't talked to him in 15 years. And then I would say, you know, this happened. I said to his wife, call the son. You know, let's get this done. And so I talked to the son on the phone. I said, look, this is what's going on. Do you think you're good for this? Can we clear this right now? This is the time. And he got better.
Yep.
You know, it's that pain people feel has so many different components to it. And the physical is just the, you know, the symptom of something else. And so it's pretty interesting. Hospice is fascinating because there's the esoteric pain and then, you know.
I mean, I saw it from day one, because the first hospice in the United States was in Brantford, Connecticut, where I am.
That's right.
And having worked with Elizabeth Cooper Ross and so forth, I was very involved with it. And what blew my mind was, once it opened, some people died on the way there.
Mm.
You know, they got in an ambulance or the family picked them up, and they're driving maybe half hour, you know, 20 minutes, and they died on the way. Everybody who got there literally died within the first week. It blew the nurses away because they were there to care for people.
Right.
And everybody was dying. There was nobody to take care of.
And in those days, it meant
had to be readjusting
dying. What
hospice meant. You know, when it meant death, people died. You know, I saw people die when a car pulled up in front of their house that said hospice on the side of it.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I've taught families that give people permission to die. Let them decide when.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and just share your love with them. And then some wonderful things happen. Yes, people can die in 10 or 15 minutes. See, like the Schiavo case in Florida,
right.
All the struggle. I had exactly the same situation with the family. Hospice refused to take her because the lawyer said it's murder if you pull the feeding tube out. I said to this woman, your family is standing around the bed. It's too emotional for them to tell you what I'm going to tell you. But if you need to go, it's okay. Your love will stay with them. They all love you. She died in 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm. And my father-in-law, that happened too. Yeah.
And I've seen this with my parents and in-laws.
Yep.
Nobody's had any trouble dying because when they're tired, ready to go, they didn't get any arguments or problems.
Right. Yeah, because we can hold them here, that's for sure, with our emotional drama.
And I have to say to people who are listening, say, how can you walk up to your family and say, it's okay to go? I know a lot of family members who say, I'm not going anywhere. And the family bursts out laughing. And, you know, so it's not that you're saying we want you dead, or, you know, you're saying we're here to help you and you make the decision. So you don't have to die at 2 in the morning when we're not here to not upset us. Because most people die in the hospital in the middle of the night. That is not an accident. It's
no.
a choice.
Yeah. When
the
everybody's gone.
There to stop you and your family isn't there to make you feel guilty.
Well, in ICU, that's the way it always was. People, you know, visiting hours are over, family's already gone, and now they have permission to die.
Right.
Because now there's nobody there to actually inhibit the process.
And I used to say to a lot of families, don't stay 24 hours a day.
Right.
Go have lunch. Mm-hmm. Step outside for 15, 20 minutes. So if your child wants to die when you're not in the room, they'll make that choice.
But I'm afraid if I go take a shower, they'll die without me.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah. But you need to live it up to them.
Yeah, give them a break.
Exactly.
Yeah, we've had some very mystical experiences in the same way of, you know, in a sense, people's spirits coming back and talking to
us.
And I had one patient who's a mystic, and I still refer people to her because she brought me messages from dead patients.
Mm.
And I began, like with animal communication, to hear voices too.
Mm-hmm.
And I always listen because... Mm. I mean, listening to that voice helped my father die laughing, literally, because the stories my mother was telling. But why was she telling them? Because the voice said to me, ask your mother how she met your father when you get to the hospital. Mm. And that was the first story. Actually, I mean, the punchline of it was my father lost a coin toss and had to take her out. And, you know, after that, I mean, he looked wonderful. I thought he wasn't going to die because he was having such a good time. But when his last grandchild entered the room, who was coming that day, see, that's another thing. He cannot know who is coming to the hospital that day.
Yes, but, they can, because they're hovering.
Right. Well, yep. Right. The consciousness aspect.
That's
you
right.
Know, but, I mean, he can't know physically and intellectually.
Right.
But when the last child who said, I'm going to come there today, walked in and was, you know, announced, he took his last breath and died.
That's the people in the OR that go under anesthesia, and then they can tell you what hair barrette you had in the top of your head.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Well,
they're hovering.
I started talking to people under anesthesia.
Yeah, you have to. Yeah.
And, you know, I was considered nuts for playing music in the operating room and talking to the patient.
Right.
Until the anesthesiologist began to see the effect it had and the benefit. So it's now we have studies that prove it. You know what I mean? That are scientific. Because, I mean, see, this was the hard part for me. You'd say something and they'd say, where's your research? I don't have any. Why not? Because everybody thinks I'm crazy, so they don't give me money to do research. See, when people began to do research to prove I was wrong, and it came out the opposite way, that's when a big shift began to happen.
Mm-hmm.
See, because these are people who have no interest in proving Siegel right. And then they do.
Mm-hmm.
And the honest ones were changed by their experience. You know, rather than say, oh, it must have been poorly controlled or there's some error in the study. Yeah, a graduate student at Yale did a study because it cost nothing to have him do it. And he wanted to do it as his thesis for the year. He came out showing a dramatic improvement in the survival of our breast cancer patients in the group. His professor said that can't be true. Change the control group. So he changed the control group and everything came out equal. Now, that's the problem. See, when a professor has to say, that can't be true, you know, change the control group, see, then I get criticized. But they don't know what went on behind the scenes for not proving that the patients did better.
Well, this is evidence-based medicine instead of principle-based medicine, which we talked about on the show yesterday. So.
And that's why I became, and I'd say this to anybody out there who is in medicine, become a storyteller.
Right.
Because when you go to a medical conference and you present several stories about patients, nobody feels threatened by a story because they can walk out saying, he's just telling anecdotes and it's not scientific. But because when I first started, I tried to be scientific and share things. And I got into arguments and yelling, and it can't be true, it's a lousy journal, blah, blah, blah. But if you told the story, a month later, some doctor who was angry at you would come over and say, hey, I got a story for you.
Mm-hmm.
Then the dialogue started.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, again, true story. An oncology group in New Haven called
me. You have 20 seconds to tell it.
Okay, to criticize me for what I was doing. And they became my biggest supporters because they realized these patients were different. So it went from criticism to support and giving hope. And then they began to see some of these marvelous reactions.
It's powerful. And my listeners hear me say all the time, heaven forbid we go off of anecdotal evidence rather than, you know, because the anecdote is
It's the truth.
It's the experience. So it's not the lab. Well, Bernie, thank you for being with us again. It was wonderful to celebrate our second anniversary on the air with you. You were one of my first guests when we first started, and it was wonderful to talk to you again.
Thank you, Keisha.
And our prayers and thoughts are with you on the East Coast as everybody gets cleaned up from Hurricane Irene.
Okay, and my telephone. Pray for my telephone.
I'm praying for it. Thank you. Remember to live, love, laugh, learn, and listen to the Healthy You Radio Network, and have a great day, everybody.